Welcome to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, we will discuss one of the most delicious fruits, the blueberry. Specifically, we're going to talk a little bit about lowbush blueberries, the original Native American fruit that got the whole blueberry craze started, from which the tall blueberry plants were created. They're a cold weather loving crop, and we're going to help a listener in California perhaps duplicate that feeling of picking these sweet and tiny blueberries. In the meantime, though, it's lots of sweet and tiny phone calls from you at 1-888-346-9499. Kate, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I am just ducky today, Kate. How are you doing?
Wonderful. The sun's out. It's not windy, so that's a great day here.
I'll send it over my way. Where is Kate?
I am in Avalon, New Jersey.
Avalon, cooler by a mile, right?
That's right, and it sure is now.
Yeah, one of the great seashore communities. You're down ashore.
Yes.
I love the ocean in the wintertime, the boardwalk and the shore towns. They're beautiful.
It's a whole different experience for sure.
All right. Well, what can we do for Kate down ashore?
A lot of the homes down here, we do not have a grass lawn. Our yards are just pebbles. The whole yard is just covered in these kind of whitish pebbles, which is a lot easier to take care of than a lawn.
Well, yes and no, because now that you've told me you have pebbles outside your yard, I know what the phone call is about.
What?
It's about the weeds that love to grow up in between those pebbles.
It is about the weeds. For all the years previous to this year, we have had a lawn service come in March and spray a pre-emergent on the yard. That pretty much takes care of it for most of the season. However, we just got a new puppy, and
With the puppy, you got religion.
Well, I figure the puppy can't wear flip-flops or shoes like I do, so I don't want her walking around on those pebbles that have been sprayed. So
yeah.
I'm wondering if there are other ways to control those weeds.
Oh, of course, there have to be, and no one should be using chemical herbicides in a water-filled situation like yours. I mean, you're near the ocean, you're near the bay, there's wetlands all around, the water table is high. One of the problems with pebbles is even if you start out with a clean surface, dirt blows in. Dirt's blowing in all the time, dirt and sand, and then seeds fall into that. It becomes the perfect medium. And once the weeds, and I'm guessing grassy weeds are your worst enemy, once they get settled in, their roots grow underneath the stones, and they get darn difficult to pull out. So you got two options. To answer your question directly, which I feel I should do every three or four shows just to keep in practice, you'd be looking for an herbicide made from iron. Gardens Alive sells their version as Iron X. But I've also seen many different versions at retail. Every company that makes some sort of organic spray products has an iron-based herbicide out there. But iron is very safe. Iron in these kind of amounts is actually good for the soil and for the environment, and it's as effective as any other herbicide. Now, if you've had good luck with a pre-emergent to prevent the seeds in there from... Although you really don't know what they were spraying, right?
No, I know that I think it had two things. I think it had a pre-emergent in
and
it and then something else to kill the weeds that were up.
If you really think you've got a lot of seeds in there that are waiting to germinate, you could get corn gluten meal and spread it on your pebbles. It would discolor them for a couple of days, weeks, you know, until it washed away. There is also liquid corn gluten meal that can be readily available. I've seen it for sale, believe it or not, at a lot of Home Depots. And the guy who developed corn gluten meal as a natural herbicide, pre-emergent herbicide, Nick Christians, said that the plan was always to sell this liquid version, which he felt is much more powerful at preventing weed seed germination. So you could literally spray corn gluten on your pebbles, and you would be doing that soon.
Yes.
Then throughout the season, you could either use an iron-based spray herbicide, or if the area isn't that big and you guys like to have some fun, get a flame weeder and get out there and toast anything as it comes up. Long term, however, I would suggest you maybe look at landscaping the area sometime over the next couple of years. There are some really nice wind and salt resistant plants your local extension service can turn you on to.
Mm-hmm.
Because the weeds are going to be a never ending battle.
Right.
And the best offense here is a defense. If you've got something really sturdy growing out there, something that holds the soil and is a block against weeds, and it'll probably look nicer too. And plants will actually handle rainwater and stuff like that much better than your pebbles will. They'll utilize some of that excess water.
Right.
Okay?
Right. Okay, well, that sounds great. That's a big help to me.
All right. Good luck.
Thank you so much, Mike.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Rick, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, Mike.
Hello, Rick. How are you?
Very good, thanks.
And where is Rick very good?
Sandy Hook, Connecticut.
Okay. What can we do you for, sir?
Okay, so I had this property that had these mini plum trees on, two of them. One seemed to thrive pretty well, the other one not thriving so well. But I noticed a couple seasons ago, these black, hardened things started growing on the limbs, and they're getting worse. It bears fruit, and it coming up fine. They've got awful to look at, and I'm wondering, what is it?
So the limbs are deformed with black spots, black, like, crazy-looking stuff.
Yeah, it's almost like a, if you think about a fungus, but it's very rough, and it's very thick and hard, and it's sort of growing all around the limbs.
And it's gnarly.
Yeah, it's really gnarly.
Yeah.
Really gross.
Okay, so, you know, I don't have personal experience with plums, and I don't have my fruit book in front of me, but I'll bet dollars to donuts that you got canker.
Canker.
Canker is a disease that affects plum trees, and it causes exactly the kind of symptoms that you've been describing. And there is no cure for canker, but it can be controlled to some degree. Now, the old joke is when you see canker appear, you cut off all the limbs that the canker is on. And some people will then reply, well, then I will no longer have a tree, but I will have a nice telephone pole. The real solution is to remove them as soon as they appear. Now, there's a couple of other things we might be able to do to help strengthen the tree. Is it growing out of a lawn? Is it in dirt? What's the deal?
It's growing out of a lawn.
And is the lawn treated with herbicides?
No.
Okay. Is the grass growing right up to the trunk?
Yes.
So there's no mulch of any kind to keep grass away?
No mulch at all.
It would be good if, when the weather warms up and the soil dries a bit, if you could get out there with a hoe, a real sharp hoe, and hoe away the grass that's right up against the tree, you know, as far out as the furthest branch goes, and then replace that grass with an inch or two of good quality yard waste compost. The compost at the soil line can help prevent disease from settling underneath the tree and then splashing back up when it rains. It could well help control the canker, which actually is a disease. As soon as you see new canker appear, you really got to cut it out. And then what do? Do you burn the wood? Do you toss it?
I usually just toss it out on the property. I have a large property, so I put it on a property that I'm not using.
Okay, so it's at least a couple of acres away?
Yes.
Okay, if you want an excuse for a little bonfire, burn your canker wood.
Okay.
Do you prune the tree every winter or spring around this time?
This is my first year I'm actually going to attempt to prune it because I have it.
Right.
So and it's growing actually pretty tall, which is almost too tall for me to start to get my fruit off of it. So I'm going to start with the top and remove all those canker branches.
Yeah.
I've got most of them, but there's still a couple left.
Okay, good. That's what I want you to limit yourself to. When you take off that biggest, tallest branch, that's absolutely a good thing to do with fruit trees because you want to keep them a manageable size. And then if you have not removed a third of the branches, open up any areas where branches are crossing or rubbing against each other, get more airflow in there.
Okay.
But make sure you get every bit of canker out.
Yeah, that's my first thing. And this is the time of year I should start doing pruning
yes.
at this point?
Yes, yes. Okay. You prune in late winter, early spring for fruit trees.
Okay, excellent.
Although with you, there's always the rule that when you see a dead or damaged or diseased limb, you take it off right away. It doesn't matter what time of year. Even if it's the worst okay. time of year, like say September, and you see canker appear in a branch, you cut it off that day.
That's when I first noticed it. I took it off about that time last year because I just couldn't stand it anymore. So
good. Your instincts were correct.
All right.
All right. Good luck, man.
I appreciate your help, Mike. Thanks so much. Love the show.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will return to the wonderful Brandywine 100 Library in Wilmington this coming Tuesday evening, February 27th at 7 p.m. Then I'll perform my annual lecture on the floor of the fabulous Philadelphia Flower Show at 4 p.m. on Wednesday, March 7th. The Flower Show itself runs from March 3rd to the 11th at the Pennsylvania Convention Center. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with Lowdown Berries and your highbrow phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com. And High Caliper Growing, creators of the original Smart Pot, Big Bag Bed, and other fabric growing containers made in the USA. Remember, the container you use affects the plants you grow. SmartPots.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, we will take a close look at blueberries that require you get down on your hands and knees to get a close look at the famed lowbush blueberry of the North. How far south and west can this Native American fruit be planted? And what the heck are chilling hours anyway? And how do you figure out how many you need? We will attack all those subjects after we attack several more of your fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Ron, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Mike, how are you?
I am just ducky today, Ron. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great on this great day.
And where is Ron doing great?
Burlington, New Jersey, across the bridge.
The Garden State. All right, what can we do for Ron in Joyce?
So we built this house, I don't know, maybe 13 years ago, and I bought this cypress tree, and it was only maybe less than two feet when we planted it, and we planted it right in front of the house, right in front of the garage. Now the tree is 20 feet, and it's covering the window, and it's such a beautiful tree. It's just marvelous. It's an eye catcher, but I'm wondering if I could trim the top off so I could see out the window, or should I leave it alone, or should I get the tree moved? I don't know what to do.
I'd move the window. And you say it's a cypress tree.
Weeping cypress.
Weeping cypress. I wonder what you really have. Did you save the tag by any chance?
No.
This would be a good one to know what the scientific name was. Cypress trees, in general, are not specifically hardy in New Jersey. The only reason I know this is they have a long history as funeral trees, as trees of remembrance. And people are given them, and they try to plant them, and that's when they find out it's a Mediterranean plant, like a fig tree that needs to be protected over winter, or, you know, they find out after the first winter, you know, it is now its own funeral tree. So, but there's a lot of misnaming of common names. You have some kind of evergreen, and it's still a weeping style, right?
Correct.
And it's growing like mad, it sounds like.
It is pretty hardy.
Huh. Be interesting to find out what you got, man. I might cut off a branch and send it to the local extension office and say, tell me what I got. How close is the base to the side of the house?
I would say it is maybe 5 to 6 feet.
Okay, so you planted it much too close to the house.
Correct.
It's probably one of the reasons it's thriving. It's living off the heat of the house. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the bad news here is that if you wanted to control the height or the shape or the spread of this tree, you should have been pruning it gently every year, perhaps every month. That's how they really make those topiaries and keep trees under control that normally don't get controlled. This thing grows to a peak, right? It's got a little bit of a Christmas tree shape to it.
Correct.
If you cut the top off, if you, quote, top it, it will look ugly as heck.
Right.
And then probably die prematurely. And it would be really difficult to move a tree this size. You would need a professional. And unfortunately, there's a good risk of damaging the foundation of your home to do it correctly. How loosey-goosey is it at the top? Can you get up there on an extension ladder?
I could probably reach the top out of my window.
I'm wondering if it might move easily. Not move the tree, but just take that top part of the tree, which will have the least resistance, which will be the most flexible, and perhaps move it over to one side or the other of the window by a couple of feet?
Maybe.
What's the side of your house made of?
Stucco.
Stucco, okay. If you're handy or somebody else is handy, I would see if we could get up there, just literally kind of force the tree to lean to a certain side, whichever side looks better, whichever side is going to look more natural. And then I would try to install a series of like wooden or metal pegs into the side of the stucco that would then support the tree and keep it moving in that direction. That way you'll still have your outstanding tree, but you'll move it away from the window. Maybe not completely, but enough that you can see who's in the driveway.
Right. Or install cameras.
Yeah. One thing you should be doing and is perfectly good to be doing is don't be afraid to prune the thing gently every winter. You can keep it at this size. You can reduce the skirt a little bit all around by taking off like 6 inches here and 6 inches there. But you don't want to do anything dramatic, and you definitely do not want to cut off the top. But I think if I'm, you know, especially if it's a weeping form, they're a lot more flexible than other trees would be. So I think you could coax it into simply growing into a different direction, and maybe everybody would be happy.
Maybe. I have to talk to my wife about it, but it sounds like a good alternative.
Yeah. Don't try to move the tree. If that tree ever has to come down, this is a case where you would cut it and leave the stump in the ground because you don't want to hurt the foundation of your house.
Right. Okay. Thank you very much for your time. I enjoy your show.
All right. Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Sarah, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, you, Mike. Long-time listener, first-time caller, and sometimes gardener.
Okay, well, it's good to hear from all three of you. Where are you, Sarah?
I'm calling from Newark, Delaware.
All right, what can we do for Sarah in Delaware?
I bought my house about 3 years ago, and I still get random catalogs that are addressed to the previous homeowner. Last week, I received a catalog for the spring edition from a mail-order nursery. As I was flipping through the pages, I came across a plant that was called a dwarf fruit cocktail tree. Immediately, I thought it could not be real because the description boasts that it bears six different types of fruit on the single tree, like nectarines, peaches, plums, and apricots. Also, it was quite curious because it was only an artist rendition drawing.
That's
not an actual picture. But I woke up on Sunday to an email confirmation from the nursery that my order for the dwarf fruit cocktail tree was actually on its way. So now that it's coming to me, I need to understand, is this a real tree? When I get it, how do I plant it? I've never owned a fruit tree before. And then how do I take care of it if it is real? How do I keep it alive?
All right, so here's the deal. This is what we used to call a novel tree. What they do is they take some kind of root stock, generally one of these fruits involved, and then they will graft branches from other trees onto it so that, you know, typically you'd get something that would have a couple of branches that were apples, a couple of branches that were peaches, a couple of branches that were pears. It could be fun. It'll certainly look nice in flower. It might look a little patchworky. So we'll see. It is a novelty. It's not anything that you're going to get a lot of fruit off of. When you want to get a lot of fruit, you generally want to plant two or three trees of the same basic fruit type, like a, you know, a couple of apple trees, a couple of pear trees, a couple of peach trees, so that there's cross-pollination. Your tree is not going to have that many flowers of any specific type of fruit. So what you'll do when you get it, you'll dig a wide hole and not a deep one. It'll probably be sent to you bare root, right?
Not sure. I don't even know what that means.
Well, there's three ways to ship trees, one of which is bald and burlapped, and then you would remove all the wrappings. Mm-hmm. Another way is in a pot, and then all you have to do is remove the pot and break up the dirt ball a little bit. But the cheapest way is to send it bare root, with just what it sounds like. The roots are out in the air. If your tree arrives bare root, the first thing you want to do is put it in a 5-gallon bucket of water for a couple of hours and rehydrate those roots because they have clearly dehydrated during storage and shipping. So while you're watering it, you want to dig a wide hole, not a deep one. Plant the tree as high in the ground as possible. Look around down towards the base of the tree and about a third of the way up. See if you can see if there's a graft. Because in addition to grafting different branches onto the tree, they may have grafted the whole schmagegi onto a specific rootstock. So if you see a bump or a line anywhere, you want to make sure that that graft stays above the soil line. If you want to see some of the root flare when you're done planting, refill the hole with exactly the same soil you took out. Don't improve the soil in the hole. And then mulch around the tree with an inch or two of yard waste compost. And then get a hose and let it drip, drip, drip into the planting area at the base of the tree for at least 8 hours. Nothing wrong with 24 hours. Obviously, you can turn it off if it starts to rain. And especially while the tree is still young, you want to repeat that deep watering once a week, any week we don't get rain. And then with any luck, I mean, you should see the flowers pretty quickly. We're getting pretty close to flowering season. Mm-hmm. And then after that, if you get really lucky and some of the branches seem to have like a million little fruits on them, pick off 2/3 of them. Make sure there's enough room between each little fruit you leave behind that you could stick another fruit in there, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And if you take off all the extra ones, that'll give the tree the energy it needs to perhaps ripen up a few of these things. And then after that, it's really up to you. These things are hard to prune because you could accidentally prune off all your pears. So if they send you instructions, follow the instructions. You could have a lot of fun with this. If it turns out that it looks like it has promise and it's a healthy tree and you get, you know, a significant number of multiple fruits, get a couple more of them, because by planting more of them, you would improve the quality of all the fruits.
And that's due to the pollination?
Yeah, exactly. The more different flowers the bees can visit and go back and forth between other flowers really increases the yield and the quality of the fruits.
All right. Well, you've helped me a lot today, Mike. Thank you.
All right. Good luck, Sarah.
Bye.
Bye-bye. 1-888-346-9499. VNOD, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, sir. Thank you for taking my call.
Well, thank you for making it, sir. Where are you?
I located in Bucks County, Newtown, Pennsylvania.
Newtown, PA. Sure, just outside of Philadelphia. Yes. All right, what can we do for you, sir?
I have a very pet, you know, curry leaf plant. It is actually a tropical thingy. So I love tropics, and I have been, you know, maintaining that since last 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And when the winter comes, I keep that plant inside my home. And when the spring starts, I keep, and when the summer starts, I keep that back. It's in a plastic pot. I have been maintaining that in a well manner, and I have two seedlings in the same pot, and one seedling started dying off without any reason. The other one is fine. I'm really concerned. I just want to save that life. Can you give me some tips, please?
Okay. So you have a well-established five-year-old tropical tree. How big is this pot? Because in the wild, these trees only grow to about 8, 10 feet tall.
Yeah. Right now, the tree itself is almost 5 feet tall, and
mm-hmm.
the pot itself is having 2 feet tall. Yeah,
okay.
It's a big pot, the biggest one which I can get it. It's a plastic one.
Okay, no, that's a good choices so far. I like the fact that it goes outside in the summer. And do you get
mm-hmm.
those aromatic flowers every year?
Yes.
And then the little fruits, which people may not realize it's not the fruits you use to make curry. It's the leaves of the plant.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so where did these little ones come from? Did you grow those from the drop seed?
Yeah, this is from the drop seed, and both I planted in the same pot because I don't know whether it is going to survive or not. But by the time, they grow and flourished. The small one is a little bit shorter, and the shorter one started slowly dying right now. I think the top part, everything is dried off, and she seemed like the stem and everything already dried off. And I just want to save the next one, the bigger one.
What I want you to do is get a smaller pot and a really
uh-huh.
good seed starting mix, a soil-free mix. Some nurseries are only open on Saturdays at this time of year. Pretty soon they'll be open every day. But see if you can find
mm-hmm.
a nice bag of light, loose seed starting mix or potting mix. But it needs to be very light, not garden soil. You really want what professionals would call either a soil-free mix or a professional mix.
Okay.
And they would use it for seed starting or for transplanting young plants. Get a much smaller plastic pot with good drainage. Fill the pot up with your seed starting soil. Sit that pot mm-hmm. with the soil in it in the sink until the soil becomes totally saturated. And then
mm-hmm.
use like a spoon or your fingers to make a nice impression in the new smaller pot. And then
mm-hmm.
use something like a serving spoon to get
mm-hmm.
underneath the healthy one and get it out of that mother pot and move it over
mm-hmm.
to the smaller pot. What I'm guessing here is happening is the bigger plant, when you water, all the water is going down to the roots of the bigger plant. And the water, especially
mm-hmm.
in the wintertime, is not going to stay near the surface. So
mm-hmm.
while the bigger plant is getting watered very well, that little plant goes without water because the roots are taking it down very quickly. So if it gets its own pot and it gets its
uh-huh.
own watering regimen, I expect it would perk up. You weren't going to keep it in the same pot for long anyway, so this would be a good time to take it out and give it its own little studio apartment. And then make sure in the smaller pot that there's intervals in between watering. when you pick it up after you fill it with water, you'll be able to tell how heavy that pot is. And then put that pot in a spot where it gets as much sun as the big plant is getting and rock it back and forth every day. And when it starts to feel light, take it back over to the sink and let it suck up water for another hour. But don't water it if it still feels heavy. You don't want to overwater a baby plant. And then same thing, in the summertime, that should go out along with the parent plant.
Okay.
And then as the years go by, you'll pot it up into a bigger pot every 2 or 3 years.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. My pleasure. Good luck. The curry plant is not easy to grow indoors. It sounds like you've been having great success. So I have a feeling your thumb is pretty green, man.
Yes. I do. Thank you so much.
All right. Good luck to you, sir.
Thank you, sir. Bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce more of my upcoming appearances. In addition to the Brandywine 100 Library this Tuesday evening, February 27th, I will speak at the Haverford Home and Garden Show on Sunday, April 15th, at the Bayshore Center in Port Norris, New Jersey on Thursday evening, April 26th, at St. Paul's Episcopal Church in Exton, PA on Saturday, May 12th, and believe it or not, in beautiful Cortez, Colorado on May 19th. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with lowdown berries and highbrow phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com. And High Caliper Growing, creators of the original Smart Pot, Big Bag Bed, and other fabric growing containers made in the USA. Remember, the container you use affects the plants you grow. SmartPots.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we will get to the question of the week, in which we will explore the meaning of chilling hours and the ranges of the various types of blueberries, including the old original Native American low bush berries. Tiny but tasty. Could they possibly be grown in California? We'll tell you after a couple more of your fabulous phone calls. At 1-888-346-9499. Danielle, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi.
Hello, Danielle. How are you?
I'm doing lovely. How are you?
I am just ducky today. Where is Danielle lovely?
I'm lovely in Drexel Hill, Delaware County.
Okay, very good. Just outside of Philadelphia. What can we do for Danielle?
Well, quite a dilemma. I don't know too much about gardening, but recently my boyfriend had read somewhere that wild ginseng is really valuable and it sells for a lot of money. So his first thought, obviously, was to buy $100 worth of ginseng seed. So he went and did that, and we're kind of – he planted some of it, half of it, and we're kind of at a loss for what to do with the other half. I want to make sure, you know, it grows well. So I wanted to kind of get your advice.
Okay, how did he plant the first seeds?
So he planted the first seeds in his mom's backyard, actually, in Chester County, so not too far from where we live, in the woods, in kind of an area that not a lot of people go. He kind of just raked up the earth a little bit and kind of, like, raked them into the ground.
And when did he do this?
He did this in, like, mid-January and kind of one of the warmer spells, because I know we had read that it's not great to plant them in the winter. It's better to plant in the fall. Mm-hmm. But also that just as long as the ground is not, like, presently frozen, it could work out. So he went ahead and wanted to get them in when it was warmer.
Okay. And did he mark where they are?
Yeah, he did. He knows where they're at.
Okay. Ginseng is incredibly valuable. There was a reality TV show on the air a year or two ago, and I think it was called Ginseng Wars, because up in the Blue Ridge Mountains and stuff like that, where ginseng grows wild, people harvest the wild ginseng and they deliberately plant it. And this show at least made them out to be like Colombian drug lords. They were booby trapping the fields. They were driving to sales meets with a shotgun on their lap. There is a big market for it. A lot of it is a black market. The plants are very slow to grow and to establish, and you're selling the root. You're not selling the top of the plant. So they need a couple years in the ground to develop a good size root system.
Okay.
And the roots are a little freaky looking. They're a little bit like mandrake roots. They look like little people. But it takes a couple of years in the ground. They grow best in dappled shade, and they are deer candy. So once the plants are up, they really need to have some sort of protective screening around them, like chicken wire over top of the plot. And are we understanding that this is not necessarily on private land?
It is private, I believe.
Okay. Well, they would have to be screened. In this case, observation would be key. I mean, if anybody figures out what you're doing, it would not be foolish to expect them to be digging up the plants.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Before you can. But basically what they need is dappled shade, not direct sun. They like a nice rich soil, but a naturally rich one, no fertilizer. They need very much to be protected from deer, and they need to grow for a couple of years to develop a good size root. What I would do with the rest of the seed, you got two choices. You can either just keep it cool and dry. Keep it in the driest spot of your house that's the coolest. Temperature and humidity adding up to less than 100 degrees.
Okay.
And then you can try planting some in the spring and the rest in the fall. Or you could go get a little seed starting setup thing from your local garden center. Get a nice light, loose seed starting mix. Get one of those things with, you know, a tray with multiple cells in it to grow plants, and try starting the seeds indoors. If they come up for you indoors, you know, put them under a fluorescent light, you may be able to, especially if you pot them up into bigger containers, you might be able to get them up to like 6 months of age or a year in age before you take them out. And that's the time when they're most at risk of being eaten by mice or voles or deer, when they're really young. So the bigger you could get the plants up to size indoors, the better chance that plant would have of making it outdoors.
Okay.
All right?
All right. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your advice. I hope that this makes him a lot of money.
I hope you hit the lottery. Yeah.
Thanks, Mike.
All right. Good luck, Dan.
Thanks. Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Vince, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello, Mike. How are you?
I am just ducky today, Vince. Thank you for asking. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great.
And where is Vince doing great?
I'm up in the Lunenburg area, which is north of Worcester. About 5 years ago, my wife and I bought a 13-acre property. We've been making changes to it, taking down some trees and so on, and replanting other things. A lot of the property is forested, and I've been clearing a lot of the trees, like I said, and really want to plant some chestnut trees in one of the areas. I was hoping to get your recommendation on what variety and kind of what to look out for.
Oh, okay. So you're in Massachusetts.
We're in Massachusetts, yes.
And you want chestnuts specifically simply because you like them?
I'd like to get the nuts. I'd like to be able to use them in recipes and so on. Really, it's for the fruit.
Right. Okay, so no surprise to you, I'm sure, the American chestnut has been all but wiped out.
That's why I'm calling.
By a blight. And there are organizations that are trying to recreate the American chestnut by hybridizing it with non-native chestnuts, like from Asia. And every once in a while, somebody finds a stand of chestnut trees that's been there for 100 years that somehow escape the blight, and they try to breed those out in case there's a natural resistance there. I was just looking for something else. I was doing a story on blueberries, and I was going to a whole bunch of different sources, and I stumbled upon this nursery, and they are selling something they call the Durland, D-U-R-L-A-N-D, chestnut, which, if I remember correctly, is a hybrid of the Japanese and Chinese chestnut. And they were saying it's very blight resistant, and they get big nuts from it. So have you been looking online for trees for sale that'll grow in your region, or talk to your local?
Absolutely. I came across the Chinese chestnut tree. Obviously, I've been trying to find out about the hybrid American chestnuts, but I don't think they're that far along in finding a solution. So basically, I think I've found that the Chinese chestnut tree is the one that might be one of my few options in this area.
And what's the climate range for them? Did you notice?
Well, I'm in 5B.
Right.
And I believe that they'll go from 4 down to about 6 or so, I believe, is the range.
Okay. Now, you know that you're either going to be buying big trees or waiting a long time.
I'm probably planting them for my grandkids who aren't around yet.
Exactly. We plant tomatoes for this summer sauce, and we plant trees for the next generation.
That's right.
Well, I would encourage you. How many trees do you think you want to put in?
I'm thinking about 10 or so.
I would try like 3 of each. I would try 3 of something like these Durlands. Maybe there's other versions of that tree available out there. Try 3 Chinese, and then I would try 3 other Chinese-Japanese hybrids.
Okay,
and
I will do that.
And see what happens. But you're right, the American chestnut is not yet far long enough to be reliable. There are thousands of dedicated people working on trying to bring this magnificent tree back. But in the meantime, it seems like you've identified all your options. Just remember, when you plant them, I don't know how much tree planting experience you have, make sure you dig a wide hole, not a deep one. Only refill it with the native soil you took out. Make sure, especially with a chestnut, you see that root flare well above ground. You don't want a lollipop sticking out of the ground. And mulch them only with compost and feed them only with compost.
Okay.
Don't use tree spikes or anything like that.
Okay, will do.
All right, good luck, sir. Let us tell your grandchildren I'll never be able to afford to retire. have them send us pictures.
I will do. Thank you, Mike.
Take All right, care. Best of luck to you, sir.
Bye-bye.
All right, as promised, it's time for the question of the week. Growing blueberries low and high, north and south. Alexis Landis, please get us started with this long-distance question.
Sure, Mike. Andre in Santa Rosa writes, back in college, I was spoiled by the taste of the delicious wild blueberries of New England. When I finally acquired space to garden a few years ago, I wanted to try and experience that great flavor again and put a couple of high bush varieties in 15-inch pots with plenty of peat moss. They produce tasty berries, but I'm still disappointed. I suspected this was because I live in Northern California, USDA Zone 9B, and blueberries are a cool climate crop. But the University of California's Chilling Hours database reports that my local station recorded at least 800 chilling hours a year in each of the last 5 years. 8 to 1400 hours by the lower than 45 degrees Fahrenheit criteria, and 800 to 1,000 hours by the more than 32 but lower than 45 criteria. This makes me hopeful that I might be able to grow low-bush New England-style blueberries. I'm crazy, right?
If anybody's crazy here, it's me for picking this difficult a question. But, you know, it's hard to find new topics after 19 years of doing this.
Yeah, cry me a river. Now, talk to us about, quote, chilling hours.
A chill hour is exactly that. An hour when you feel chilling. The classic definition pegs this at temperatures below 45 degrees Fahrenheit for a full hour. The other range that Andre cites, between 32 and 45 degrees, is actually felt to be more informative, as it excludes temps below freezing, because those hours do not contribute to fruit formation.
So, plants with a chilling requirement need a certain number of hours that are cold, but not freezing over winter. And is it chill or chilling?
Well, chill seems to be the preferred term among professionals. Now, let's say that Andre continues to get at least 1,800 hours of chill a year, which really doesn't surprise me. Even though he's in California, I've spent a lot of time up in the wine country, and you often need a jacket at night.
But wait a second, he's in USDA growing zone 9B. That sure sounds warm to me.
You know, the USDA zones only indicate the maximum low temperatures an area tends to get over winter. For his 9B, the most extreme cold he should ever expect is 25 to 30 degrees Fahrenheit. But Andre found the really important information in those records of actual recorded chilling hours near his home. If he continues to get those 800 hours of temps between 32 and 45 a year, he can certainly grow regular blueberries, and he can try and get the little guys, those low-bush types, to do well, especially if he's willing to do a little extra work.
We already know that he can grow high-bush varieties, and most experts limit their range to no higher than USDA Zone 7.
Right. Rabbit eye types are the blueberries recommended for his zone. They're bred to produce in warmer climates. So are, quote, southern high bush varieties, some of which can get by with as little as 200 hours of chilling a year. Now, if Andre bought his plants locally, they could well be southern high bush types, which would rock with 800 hours of chilling. But if he's getting fruit from regular northern high bush types, these little guys might do well also.
All right, tell us about these low bush berries.
Low bush blueberries grow wild in the northern states and Canada. They're a true native fruit that locals have enjoyed for centuries. And they're the plant that provided the breeding stock to make high bush varieties, which had to have been quite a task as they are the opposite of high. Low bush blueberries are a ground cover. The plants are only about a foot tall, and the berries are small, so they're not cultivated commercially, which is why we really don't know that much about their needs or limits. They're not a cash crop that's been researched. They're a regional treat that people who can still get down on their hands and knees look forward to every season.
Huh, you're making a sketch of what looks like a hard plastic kiddie pool.
That's my suggested container here. Unlike high bush varieties, low bush berries spread by underground root systems, and they need some room to wander. And you don't get that many berries per square foot, so you want something that's a lot bigger than a pot or even a half whiskey barrel.
Wow, so you don't mind growing in containers in this situation?
Not in this case. In this high a zone, it's a distinct advantage. Because they're above ground, the roots are in the same temperature as the ambient air, which actually lowers their growing conditions a full two USDA zones down and places them in a technical zone 7. punch holes in the bottom of the pool for drainage, fill it with half peat moss for the acidity blueberries require, and half compost for stability and nutrition. Put the pool up on a picnic table or sawhorses, and you'll get a double bonus. It'll keep the roots even cooler at night, and it'll bring the berries up close for easier picking. Triple bonus! Blueberry leaves turn bright red in the fall, and they stay on the plants for a long time. So you'll also bring the autumn color of New England to California. Well, that sure was some interesting information about chilling hours in blueberries now, wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail, with a couple more growing tips, tricks, and cheats we didn't have time to vocalize today, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes, my producer is threatening to turn my kiddie pool into a hot tub if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499. Or send us your email. You're tired, you're poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore. At garden@whyy.org. Please include your location.
Please, please, please.
And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Where you'll find the answers to all those questions you were going to ask us. Audio of this show, past shows, and our podcast. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our vice president of production is Terry Murray. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Our engineer is Al Banks. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath, who also mans the phones today, or perhaps womans the phones today. Anyway, you can check out her fine work at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page.
And like us there, like us.
Webmasters Larissa Sapko and Rich Banowitz keep our website colorful. Our assistant associate producer of Production Association Assistance is Brett Rader. High and mighty Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Our lowdown editor is Al Banks. I'm your host, blueberry-loving Mike McGrath. Well, I would be if the birds didn't get them all first, which, hey, you know, that reminds me, where's that motion-activated sprinkler I set up to try and keep them away? And, hey, where's my bird scare flash tape? That can work, too. And, hey, and the bird netting I used last... Hey, wait a minute, where are my keys? I gotta go home first if I hope to see you again next week. What can you do when your lawn looks more like a lake? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next You Bet Your Garden, we'll discuss your options for curing compaction, plus your compacted phone calls. That's on the next You Bet Your Garden.